Hello, fellow homebrewers. JP here, and I want to introduce to you the brand new Brewbuilt X1 Conical Series available at More Beer. More Beer sells the highest standard in homebrewing equipment, and the Brewbuilt Conicals are just that. They're made from mirror-polished 304 stainless steel, and they come with loads of features that you and I have been looking for. They have a full 2-inch bottom dump valve, which will eliminate your clogging issues, while the sturdy base includes 4 reinforced legs, just like those big pro tanks do. More Beer also carries the Brewbuilt line of options and add-ons like casters, pressure kits, and even external glycol chillers. So you can find out more about the new Brewbuilt X1 conical uni tanks by going over to morebeer.com for detailed videos on the entire line of Brewbuilt conicals. You can trust Brewbuilt with your next fermentation, and you can trust More Beer to find the right conical for you. Brewbuilt at morebeer.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Welcome to the session. I'm your host, Justin Crosley. Welcome to the show. Back in the studio once again for the first time in 2024. It's already January 8th, which to me means it's practically almost Christmas again. It's just time. When you're in your 40s, guys, time just goes real fucking fast. It's not like it used to be. So now, yeah, it's practically almost Christmas again. I'm stoked to be back here and starting the year with a show I'm really excited about with, to be honest with you, a brewery that I've just become familiar with and become familiar by ordering the beer here at the Hop Grenade. My beer buyer, Lewis, who's a great individual and a great finder of fantastic beer, found you folks, and I'm stoked that he did because I learned about the beer, loved the beer, and now happy to have you guys in the studio. Today, we have Cuvée Belgian Brewers of Sonoma County in the studio with us, and I've got Hendrik Verspecht and Cody Seaton. Welcome, guys.
Right on. Thanks for having us, Justin.
I'm stoked you're here.
Yeah.
Like I said, I just kind of found out about you guys, and then the more research I'm doing, I was like, you know, I've seen your name, the brewery name sort of appear different ways. Cuvée Belgian Brewers, and then I kind of look up the names of the people who work there, and I'm like, oh, they must be like, there were a Belgian brewery first, and now they have one here in California. Like, I kind of thought of you like Trumer, right? And then I do more research and find out that's not the case at all. We're going to learn that whole story here today from Hendrik and Cody. But you are making not just Belgian-inspired, but really like Belgian-style, Belgian-inspired, Belgian-legit beer here in the U.S.
Yep, that's right. So, you know, our goal is kind of to have that showcase that traditional side of Belgian beer, showcase the spectrum, but then also kind of embrace, you know, that California spirit to, you know, to tweak things and change things and to venture out into new and exciting things.
Perfect. Well, not only do I think that's necessary right now in the beer world, but it's also refreshing. So I was glad to find that you guys are this cool hybrid of Belgian and California beer, which, like I said, we'll learn all about here on today's show. Before moving on, I want to thank our sponsor, More Beer. beer. More Beer's been with us since the day zero, and you know that. And I just want to thank them every single show that we do. Go to morebeer.com, check it out. If you haven't ordered anything recently, you should do so now, especially during January. You know, January's tough for everybody. So if you got a couple bucks burning a hole in your pocket and you want to get a brew day in, go over to morebeer.com and get your ingredients and do that. And also check out their YouTube page. They're killing it over there. They're getting more views on their YouTube page than I do, which is really annoying to me, but they're doing good stuff. So go over to More Beer and check it all out. And then, of course, if you want to look into the brewery that we're talking to today, go to Coover. I'm gonna say it phonetically so you can do it. Cooverbrewing.com. C-U-V-E-R. But the brewery is called Cuvée, and we're going to learn why and how that name came about, too. But it's C-U-V-E-R-Brewing.com if you want to go learn about in advance. And then one more thing before we jump into the interview, I want to tell everybody that it's been officially announced Spring Brews Festival 2024 is Saturday, March 30th from noon to 4. You guys here at Cuvée are going to receive your invite this week. You've awesome. Never been at the festival before, yes. As far as I know, and I would love to have you. But Saturday, March 30th, and tickets will be on sale this week. So keep an eye out for that over on the Brewing Network. .com. All right, so we're going to dive right into it.
Sounds good.
We should talk about the name, yep. and sort of the history of the brewery, and then I really want to talk about your history too, Hendrik, because I find it fascinating. But Cuvée, C-U-V-E-R, is a combination of two family names, right?
Yes.
Tell us about that.
That's correct. So, yeah, most people know us as Cuver.
Sure. Does it drive you crazy?
Fine. No, I got over that a while ago. As soon as we thought of the name, we were like, okay, people are going to call us this. That's fine. But we just kind of like to think of it. I was like, oh, no, if you're an insider, you know, and you get the correct people, and I hope you have fun with that.
There you go. Totally.
But the name itself is a combination of the family names of the two founding families, which are my future in-laws, the Cushings. They're a local Sonoma County family, and then my family, the Verspechts. So we're from Belgium, and so we just took that CU and the VR, smushed it together to make an actual word. So it's an old French verb that means to ferment.
Perfect.
Which was exactly perfect coincidence there. Nowadays, it's only really heard of in an idiom in France.
Okay.
Cuvée sans vin. It means to sleep off your hangover.
Oh, nice.
Right. So,
which you made some good shirts playing off.
Yeah, no, unfortunately, my mom hates that comparison. That's the only reason it's not on the website.
I think it's great.
I think so, too. I think it's hilarious.
Now, but C-U-V-E-E, that's another French word, right?
Yes, correct. So that's you know, what they use in the wine industry. It usually refers to, you know, the blending of wines and aging. So the two words do have a linguistic common origin.
But they don't both mean to ferment.
They don't both mean to ferment, no.
Yeah.
But they do both come from that original verb.
Because my understanding of cuvée, too, is usually like sort of the master blend, right? Like the special blend. Yes. Like I've known that my entire career. So to see when I found out, when I looked into your name and realized it was also pronounced cuvée and that it had this meaning, I was like, oh, man, have I had C-U-V-E-E wrong this whole time?
No. Nope.
But they are two different. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. Correct. But it is a good way to explain to people how to say it.
Because
a lot of people do know how to say the cuvée with the two E's. So.
Yeah, in fact, I don't know that I've ever heard anybody say cuvée. Give me your cuvée, right? But they might fuck up your name all the time. So that's interesting.
We get Culver a lot.
Okay.
Culver Brewing. Yeah. It's like, well, you know, that's something different.
Well, when I will admit too, and it's funny how we just add letters. Like our brains just work that way. Mm-hmm. Before I started doing my research, which helps me really get to know, and then it sticks in your brain, right? Yeah, for some reason, I kept adding an L too. And
it
then
makes sense.
Finally, I'm like, where did that L come from?
Well, from Culver Brewing out of Culver, California.
That makes sense.
And a lot of companies that we work with, you know, for packaging and stuff kept getting it wrong too in the beginning because when you start that company in the beginning, sometimes you don't always pop up on a Google search.
Yeah.
And when they type in cuvée or couver, Google gives you an autocorrect and you're like, oh no, it must be Culver.
Right. It's funny too, when I do revert to couver, it's such a hard R. I feel like such a redneck too. Man, I'm from the desert, so I'm allowed to be a redneck. But I'm like, man, stop with the R. It's such a hard R. Anyway, cuvée, Belgian brewers of Sonoma County. And now the cool part is that you really are from Belgium. So it's not a misnomer to say Belgian brewers. You were born in Belgium?
Yes, correct. Okay. Yeah.
And of course, your parents born in Belgium.
Yep. So my entire immediate family we're all from Belgium. Most of my family's still in Belgium.
Okay.
So it's just my immediate family that moved over here.
Okay. And why did you move here? Why'd the fam move?
So my dad, he's an electronics engineer.
Okay.
He had a company in Europe that got bought out by a bigger corporate company that he was consulting for here in the U.S.
Okay.
And the whole gang moved over.
Nice.
Three or four different families, a Belgian family, two French families, and a Lebanese family. We all just hopped over the pond. And
did you move to Sonoma? Or
we moved to Santa Rosa, yeah.
Santa Rosa, yep. Got it. Yeah.
Yep.
And then your dad has dual citizenship?
Yeah, now he does. Yeah.
What about you? Do you have
do not. No, okay. Actually. So we'll come back around to this, like you said, but my education is actually preventing me from getting it. Because I spent too long out of the U.S. on my green card to have my original timeline count.
I see.
So when I came back, that's when my countdown reset. So I had to wait another 5 years after I moved back from college before I was applicable.
Okay.
Or get married, and then it's three.
Got it. So you're a Belgian citizen.
Yes.
And not a U.S. citizen quite yet.
Nope. Okay. I'm just a legal alien.
Right. So U.S. immigration law is so fucked too. Like, people want to complain about that on Fox News. Forget about that. Try to legally do something. It's ridiculous here. Anyway, that's neither here nor there. Okay. So the family moves here. And at what age are you when you move?
I'm 13 when we move.
Okay, yeah. Got it. So you start high school here.
Exactly. Came in as a freshman.
Yeah, okay.
And that was it. You know, and that's kind of when the accent kind of dropped because, well, who else around here speaks Flemish?
Yeah. Do you speak French and Flemish?
Yeah, but I must admit, my French is very rusty.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Flemish, though, is so difficult. I've spent a lot of time in both Belgium and France, and I suck at both, to be honest, but I tried a little with the Flemish. I had met some cool brewers, and I wanted to hang out there, and I said, yeah, let's try this. Oh, fuck no. That's a tough one for Americans.
There's a couple of sounds in there, yeah, that seem kind of hard for American tongues and lips to configure.
But you must have learned English in Belgium, even before coming
only a
here.
Little bit. I mean, we hopped across the pond a couple times since my dad was consulting for the company that eventually bought him out.
Okay.
And so I'd gotten conversational English down.
Okay.
By that time. But I'd only had 1 year in middle school out there where we learned to read and write. And in Belgium, they actually teach British English.
Right.
And they're pretty adamant about you speaking with a proper British accent.
Interesting.
Except for me. I got the exception because we already knew we were moving to California.
Okay.
So I got to say like hella and dude and it was awesome.
That's great. Especially being the only one who's allowed. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's hilarious. So okay, so you move here as a family, and what I gather is that your dad just kind of missed the beer from back home, so he became a home brewer?
Yeah, that was definitely the start of it, about not even a full year in, like maybe 10 months in. He's like, I need my beer.
Yeah.
And, you know, he didn't want to just keep buying, you know, import. You know, we know these Belgian brands, we love them, but they do suffer for transportation, and let's face it, any Belgian guy needs three beers a day.
Okay.
And you'll break the bank just buying that.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
And then he just found that locally made versions, a lot of them were lackluster. They just weren't very representative. And
especially back then. It's gotten better, right? But like, so we're talking what here?
2012, 2013.
Yeah, we were like just figuring it out, I feel
like.
Yeah,
it's like Russian River or nothing else.
Yeah, they were then, like the only ones, exactly. And so, yeah, he had brewed with his dad back in the day because my grandpa was involved in the beer industry in Belgium.
Okay.
And so he knew how to do it. So he just picked it up. The first homebrew we made was an Orval clone because that was nice. The beer he missed the most.
I bet. And, what a tough one to reproduce, though.
Honestly, yeah. Worked out great.
Oh, nice.
It
okay.
did. It really worked out great. And after that, we were like, all right, I guess we got this.
Did you guys take a yeast culture from the bottle, like bought a bottle of Orval? Or
no, actually, at that point, it was already easy enough. I mean, we just had our little homebrew store, you okay. know, down the
and
street.
And they had like Orval and, yeast.
Well, they had, because it's a double fermentation, Orval.
Okay.
So it's a, you know, classic first fermentation with a Saccharomyces Abbey ale strain.
Okay.
You know, classic Belgian strain. And then it has a secondary fermentation with a Brettanomyces strain.
In the bottle or just secondary, even in the carboy for right. you?
So,
that, your
so we were carboying.
Okay.
It.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that worked great.
Nice. Okay. So success on the first one.
Yep.
All right. That's how you get hooked right there.
Exactly.
You're like, oh, how hard could this be then?
Yeah. Yeah, a lot different than my first homebrew.
Oh, totally. It's you and me both.
Yeah. Disasters, oxidized messes. And we're like, oh, okay.
But he has a science background. And then we're going to talk about your education. But it sounds like even early on, you had a science background.
Yeah. I've always been kind of into it. I've always kind of knew what I wanted to do in a general's kind of scheme. Like I knew I wanted to go study biology at the University of Ghent when I was in sixth grade.
Wow. Okay.
That was my plan back then. The yeah. only thing that changed by the time I actually was able to make it to university is I realized biochemistry was the way to study the science of biology, not necessarily biology.
I see.
Yeah.
So let's jump into that, too, and yeah. we'll kind of bounce back and forth. But you ended up going back to Belgium in 2016 to go to school to Ghent University, right?
Yep.
Okay. And at that point, like you just said, you discover biochemistry and biotechnology?
That was the official name of the degree. And so it's a biochem degree that's kind of updated for the modern time and how technology has kind of entered its way into those sciences.
Okay.
Yeah.
And in your mind, was that meant for beer? Or have something else in mind?
It always had beer in the background.
What would be another example? If you weren't into beer, what else would you do with that degree?
Oh, like plant breeding, developing okay. new varietals.
Hop
that's
hop,
I see.
Hops, yeah. Why not?
Okay. Okay.
Yeah. So that would kind of be, you know, another field. Like I probably would have gone more into like a technical agricultural background.
If
the beer thing didn't go, but the beer thing does predate the degree.
Got yeah. it. And that was in your mind pretty much the whole time.
Yeah.
And had you and your dad, you know, discussed becoming a brewer at that point too? Or
yes.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, yeah. So after we did, we'd already been homebrewing for a while, and then it was actually, I went to Belgium by myself for a summer during high school, and
just a party or what?
Well, more or less.
Okay. Yeah. just kidding. But you had family there,
yeah,
right? So you're going
exactly.
to stay with family.
Staying with family, okay. meeting with old friends, you know, from before we moved. And that was the first time that I could legally drink in Belgium.
Okay.
Yeah. And
at, I came, at what, 18 though, right?
No, the 16.
16, okay.
Yeah. Okay, and then I came back and I'm like, oh my God, beer's amazing.
Yeah, okay.
Beer's amazing. And so then I got more into the homebrewing. That's when I made my first original recipe, which was the pepperwood.
Ah, which is what's in our glass right now, right?
What's in our glass right now, exactly. Okay. Yeah, so that was my first original creation.
Well, let's take a second to talk about the beer then. Mm-hmm. And you made this
That's
creation
great.
When you're 16? Is that
yeah.
what you're saying? Okay. Yeah, let's talk about the beer.
Yeah. So, you know, like I said, the first beer that my dad made was the Orval clone. And so that was actually his lightest, most drinkable beer, which for those who don't know, it's a 6.5-ish% mixed fermentation dry hopped pale ale.
Okay.
So it's got a lot going on.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know,
honestly, I never would have described it that way. But I know that you're right. But yeah, it has so much going on that it's hard to even describe it as a dry hopped pale ale.
Right. I know.
Yeah, I've heard people say that it's kind of like what British pale ales would have been back in the 1800s.
Okay.
With the Brettanomyces secondary fermentation.
Without a clean fermentation.
Exactly.
That makes sense.
Yeah, yeah, it does make dry sense. Hopped and then that extra fermentation. Yeah.
Yeah, and so I just wanted to create something that was just a little bit lighter, more palatable. And my kind of concept was like, what's a beer you can have with lunch on a sunny California day?
Yeah.
So that was what I was going for. So I knew I loved saisons because you could play with spices, you can play with fruit, you can play with different hop schedules. It's actually pretty open.
Okay.
As long as you ferment it nice and dry.
I see.
Right. And so, yeah, I just walked into my backyard. We had a Meyer lemon tree. I was like, oh, yeah, I can use that. And then it was like, oh, we have a bay tree. Oh, I can use that.
Okay.
Cool.
Yeah.
Bada beam, bada boom.
Right.
As it goes.
Obviously some peppercorn in there,
no,
too.
No peppercorn.
Oh, no kidding.
So the California Bay Laurel tree has several names, and the pepperwood tree is one of them. That's why the beer is called the pepperwood.
But it has a little peppery
it
spice.
Definitely does. It definitely yeah. does.
Is that esters from fermentation, or is that from the tree, too?
You tell me. It's one of those things. The yeast definitely carries some peppery characteristics. Mm. So does the Bay Laurel. I think it's... It'd be hard to say that it's not both.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so, you did something really fun, too, where you shared with me the dry leaf and the fresh leaf. And the fresh leaf had a lot of herbaceous tones, but once it was dried, it became very expressive, very, like, wonderful spice character.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And we noticed, too, when we use the fresh leaf, it's a bit more, because you start pulling other polyphenols just out of the leaf itself.
Yeah.
And that just adds some kind of astringent bitterness to the beer.
Okay.
So using the dried really promotes just that oil extraction.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Yeah. So I'm glad you guys are saying this, too, just as a hobbyist who loves to cook, too. You know, often the recipes will also distinguish between using fresh or dried bay leaf or something else. And really, I'm always like, I don't know, what's the difference? Like, I'm going to use what I have on hand. Yeah. But I like to know and talk about what the difference is. So that was really cool even to hear, like, oh, no, you're tasting a difference.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, and we actually tested the same with the peels of the Meyer lemons.
Oh, right.
The pith, when not dried, gives, again, way more of that polyphenol, like bitterness.
Interesting. Yeah. And that's something you want to avoid?
It is something you want to avoid.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Yeah. And in fact, I kind of went away from Belgians years ago when American craft brewers weren't really nailing it. And I think it was polyphenols that turned me off.
It's a big part of it. And it's like, there's, you know, polyphenols are just a really big group.
Sure.
Right. And, you're going to want some in a Belgian.
Yeah.
But a lot of the times you kind of want the aromatic parts that the yeast brings forth.
Yeah,
that are herbaceous in character. When you start pulling them out of plant material direct, that's often astringent bitterness.
I see. Mm-hmm. Okay, so let the yeast do its job.
Exactly.
Okay. Yeah. Well, it's a great saison. And I was saying to you guys before we hit the record button today, I do find the saison style this kind of exceptional style. In fact, you guys are telling me a funny story about it that I want you to tell. But what I was saying is... it doesn't matter where the trends are with Belgian beer. Like, Belgian beer can come in out of fashion. But Saison is a staple. If you give almost anybody a Saison that tastes like this, by the way, fresh, dialed in, not too phenolic, almost everybody goes, I love that beer. Like, I love Saisons. It's just it's a hero, no matter where the trends are. Do you find that, too? Like, as a brewer, like people are just like, give me a good Saison and it's fine.
Yeah. I mean, to a degree, we do have a lot of people that come in that are kind of turned away from saisons, but only because there's a lot of saisons out here that are mixed fermentation.
Okay.
And a lot of times they're like, no, saisons are always sour.
No.
And then I tell them, it's like, no, just like try this. This is a really cleanly fermented saison and it's very approachable and it often changes their mind.
Yeah. And they are, so they, of course, they have that Belgian character, but they're still clean and dry. In fact, you even said when you were inventing the style, you said lunch beer.
Yes.
Right? Mm-hmm. Which to me, that's like the traditional French Saison, and what it was meant to be. Yeah. We're on a lunch break. We're exactly. working the farm. Give here's your saison.
Yeah, give me something nice, sessionable, with good flavor that's going to go with my saucisson.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Which I love, by the way. Oh, I speak my language now.
When you were coming up with the recipe, did you always know you wanted it to be lower ABV? Was that kind
yes.
of from the
yeah.
beginning? Was like
definitely. Yeah. I mean, the original
what's the ABV
beer
in this?
The ABV on the one that we make commercially is 4.8.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
I wanted to have a session beer. The original one was a little higher, kind of range between 5.2 and 5.4, but mm-hmm. we figured for commercial purposes, it was really good to have one below 5.
Okay.
Yeah. When I do tastings, people love that. They love that it's something they can have, and they know it's not too heavy. They can have a few of.
Sure. That makes sense.
Definitely.
Yeah. Well, this is something I share with most brewers. We like lighter beer.
Yep. Mm-hmm. You want to be able to have more. Well, first of all, have one and go back to work.
Yeah.
Or if it's after work, have more than one and not be all fucked up.
Like, exactly.
Let's be honest. So, Cody, you had mentioned too, and I think this is, I didn't think about it this way until you said it, but Saison has also become somewhat ubiquitous in the American craft beer scene, so that people don't even think of it as a Belgian style anymore.
No. It's like how many times I would walk into a craft beer bar and they would see me and they'd see this thing that says Belgian Brewers and they're like, oh, that's great, your beer's good, but Belgian beer doesn't sell. And then, you know, I'm like, oh, okay, but I'll stick around and have a beer. And I'm looking at their menu and I'm like, wait a second, half of these are Saisons. What's going on? And I'm like, oh, well, that's something different. That's Saison. I'm like, well,
okay.
Okay, sure. Yeah, we have those too.
You're
you
not going to argue with your potential customer.
No.
But you want to.
I get where they're coming from, though. I do, because to the American craft brewer, Saison has been presented as something kind of unique and different, whereas Belgian beer is your double and your triple and your quad, you know? Maybe a blonde and things like that. So
sure.
I definitely get where they're coming from, but it was eye-opening to me because I don't know if Saison is like the most Belgian style beer I can think of.
Yeah,
to
right.
me, but in, you know, the American craft beer, looking at those categories, you know, it's a distinct different thing than a Belgian.
Yes. Beer, you know? Well, and we almost always have some sort of Belgian blonde or Saison on our tap number 10 here at the Hop Grenade. Mm. And almost daily, we get somebody who comes in and says, well, I usually drink Blue Moon. You know, what do you have? And we don't shun anybody here. We always go for tap number 10. And I'll tell you what, 9 times out of 10, they say, yep, I'll have that one. Like, we give them a taste, and then they go, yep, that's fine. 8 times out of 10, we've switched them off of Blue Moon. They're like, oh, and I'm like, yeah, so Blue Moon is kind of, you know, whatever. I'm glad you like Blue Moon.
It's a good beginner beer. Not when a I problem. Was 21. I loved that beer. I mean, you know,
but the sheer difference, like, it's close enough that there's this familiarity, but the difference in quality is so night and day that I love it when people are like, oh, I think I will always come in here and have your tap number 10. And it almost doesn't matter what brewery we have on, because Lewis chooses breweries that are quality, but they're always going to exceed the expectations of Mr. or Mrs. Blue Moon, right?
Yeah.
Yep.
Like I said, it's just that style. It's like a hero. It just keeps going.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's ageless.
So you go to school.
Yep.
You come back in, 2021 or so?
Yep.
With a master's degree.
Yep. So that was a good 5-year fast track to a master's degree.
Wow.
Which was a blast. It was pretty intense.
Okay.
But I would do it again in a heartbeat.
Okay.
It was a lot of fun, you know, living in Ghent and experiencing that city. It's magical. If anyone who's listening ever goes to Belgium, don't leave Ghent out.
Okay.
You know, people are always like, okay, I'm going to go to Brussels or I'm gonna go to Bruges.
Of course.
Right? And Ghent's right in the middle.
Okay.
Make it a stop.
Nice.
It's a gorgeous city and there's a lot to do and the people are awesome and you'll fall in love.
Okay.
But yeah, so I spent 5 years also just drinking as much Belgian beer as possible.
Yeah.
That was part of the experience. And I kept telling myself that it's like, oh no, I'm doing research. This is important.
Well, and you were.
Well, now I know. I'm like, wait, this was important, you know? And that's definitely, you know, a big part of when we approach our beers and we finish beers or we make new beers, our palate is honed in.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, like we know, like, I'm not going to release anything if I don't think it could fly on the Belgian market.
I see.
That's where I put my my line.
That's your baseline.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
I like that.
Yeah. Other than if it's not there, for me, it's not worth it.
Yeah. Okay. So what do you do when you come back? Like, was there already a plan to start a brewery?
There was. Okay. So my senior year was 20 to 21.
Yeah.
You know, mid pandemic. Yeah. In person classes had just kind of started coming back in.
Okay.
And this was October of 2020. And you know, we're not going to get too political over here, but elections were coming up,
mm-hmm.
and my parents were a little bit anxious, and they were like, "Yeah, I don't know, maybe we should see about moving to Canada."
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, "You know what? Just in case, I'm going to poke around, see if I could get a PhD here at the brewing facilities. You know, it could be cool." So I got talking to my professor, got that going. 5 days later, my dad's like, "Hey, there's this brewery for sale. Let's go for it."
Wow.
I'm like, "Oh, yeah, sure. Let's do it. Let's do it."
Yeah, how are you going to say no to that?
Right? Exactly. I was like, "You get to go have your own brewery." I'm like, "Okay, awesome. Let's do it." Then my professor over there was like, oh no problem. We'll just talk to Glenn at Davis." Like, Glenn, like, "Yeah, Professor Fox runs the beer program."
Yeah, yeah.
Like, oh, wow, this escalated really quickly.
Amazing.
So, yeah, we got in touch with them. You know, I still occasionally go by. It's really great to have that connection. PhD and brewery at the same time would have been a bit too much.
Okay. So you stuck with the masters.
We stuck with the masters. We purchased a brewery in April of 21 while I was still in Belgium.
Okay.
And at the time...
Do you mind if I ask what brewery it was?
St. Florian's.
Oh, gosh. I hardly even remember that brewery. Yep. Which might be why it was for sale. Okay.
Yeah, it was a little brewery. You know, they had a pretty good run.
Yeah,
But in the end, you know, it was ran by a active firefighter. And so pretty much after, you know, the 2017 fire started becoming a big annual thing.
Yeah.
He pretty much had to shut down production.
I see.
Every year for fire season. And then in 2019, when the Kincade fire came through Sonoma County, their lot actually got shut down completely with power and everything. And so they had quite a bit of losses.
I see.
And that was kind of the last drop in the bucket for them, unfortunately. So it wasn't the pandemic that took them out.
Yeah.
It was the fires. But yeah, so we bought them out in April of 21. That was our official date. So I was still in Belgium. I was, you know, calling BSG over here and stuff, trying to get stuff going and send them all the recipes. And it was my dad, and we had an assistant brewer at the time. And then I was watching them brew on Skype. Those were my first brews.
Okay.
So, and then occasionally, you know, you have the funny moments like, "Oh no!" And everyone's gone.
Yeah. What happened?
Hello?
Yeah. Amazing. So this was just your family at that time?
No, we were already together. Yeah, I know. We kind of ran over that part. But
let's take a quick break. Here's where we'll take a quick break, because I want to make sure we understand how the two families came together to do this, too. So you're listening to The Session. We are hanging out with Cuvée, Belgian Brewers of Sonoma County. And we're going to be back right after these words.
The leader in affordable, high-quality kegerators is here. Introducing Komos, the kegerator designed with serious beer drinkers in mind. It features an all-stainless steel draft tower, a major upgrade over traditional chrome-plated brass towers, and Komos keeps your new tower cold with their air-cooled tower fan, wrapping your beer lines in frigid coolness. Your beer is poured from innovative forward-sealing faucets that don't leak, so they stay cleaner for longer. Dual gas inlets on the rear of the fridge allow you to run both CO2 and nitrogen gas. Serve your beer with CO2, serve your kegged wine or even cocktails with nitrogen. The digital temperature display has the largest range available, allowing you to use the Komos kegerator for fermentation if you need to. And now Komos kegerators ship with duo-tight draft fittings for that click-to-connect assembly we've all dreamed of. Buy direct from komosdraft.com and receive free shipping on your order. That's KOMOSdraft.com.
Since 1979, Williams Brewing has offered the finest equipment and freshest ingredients and the best customer service in the business. Their website features real-time inventory, which means if you can put it in your cart, they can guarantee it'll ship the same day by 4 p.m. on weekdays. Want easy and simple electric brewing? Check out the new Series 2 Mash and Boil, featuring an elevated grain basket so you don't have to calculate sparge water. Williams also features the full Kegland line, everything from Brewzilla to Maltzilla, and a huge selection of duo-tight fittings. Looking for a kegerator? Look no further than the Kegland Series X and Plus kegerators, which feature 4 and 8 keg capacity in a compact footprint, and free shipping to the lower 48. Interested in distilling? Look up their proven Williams American Bourbon and Brandy kits, as well as complete distilling equipment packages and conversion kits for popular systems like the Mash and Boil, Anvil, and the Grainfather. Check them out today. Go to williamsbrewing.com to browse their vast selection.
Welcome back to the session. Thank you for hanging out with us today. We're hanging out with Cuvée. Okay, I can do just cuvée sometimes.
Oh,
right?
Yeah.
Okay.
No, for
it
sure.
gets longer
oh, please.
And longer
yeah.
every
yeah, just
time.
Cuvée.
Yeah, yeah, we just added the Belgian brewers part so they knew we were a brewery and right. that we were Belgian.
I like it. I like it. So we were just talking about some of the history of the brewery and then how the family came together. Yeah. Before we do that, though, because I can tend to really dive into that for so long because I enjoy it, let's talk about the beer.
Yeah.
Our listeners want to hear about that, too. So what's in our glass now?
So right now we went from one light botanical saison, the pepperwood, to one of my other original recipes that I finally got to remake, which is a red rosemary rye saison.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's a really unique little beer. This was mostly done in a small batch, so it's going to be a taproom exclusive. It's going to be released this Friday. So,
oh, nice.
Yeah. This is going to be a...
And you guys are trying to do special releases every month this year, I read.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah.
It's ambitious.
Come on, Hendrick, keep ambitious. Beer.
Yeah, I know, but it's just one of those things, you know. You got to appreciate all those, you know, craft beer lovers that they're looking forward, you know, for something new, something creative.
Absolutely.
And so we were kind of trying to see, like, how small of a batch can we make, you know, feasibly, and this was kind of part of that project.
Okay. It's called Midnight Gardener, if I remember
yes,
right.
Yes, Midnight Gardener. It's named after me.
Uh-huh. Because of what weird habit do you have?
Well, you know, when you start a company, you don't get a lot of daylight in your home garden.
Mm-hmm.
So I often come home at night, put on my headlight, and get into my garden.
That's awesome.
Yeah. I have a green thumb. I love plants.
Yeah,
really,
like you said, it would have been your other job if you didn't get into beer.
Yeah.
Right? So
true.
Yeah.
True. But okay. You know, fermentation's fascinating, so yeah. I'm definitely happy to be here.
Absolutely.
And mixing the plants and the yeast together and just having
Heck
a
yeah.
good old time.
So is a red saison something that I would find elsewhere, or this is kind of your invention?
So there are dark saisons in Belgium.
Okay.
They're rarer. You know, most saisons you find are really light and bright. There are a handful of them, and they're kind of harder to find brands. Like, I wouldn't even be able to just be like, yeah, go get that one in Belgium. I remember having them, but they're kind of far few in between.
Okay.
But as you guys are having this, you could tell that as far as a saison for the winter time goes... This definitely fits the bill.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, and it's about 6.7% or so, so it's a little higher.
Yep.
Right? Well, obviously maltier. The rye comes mm-hmm. through very nicely.
Yeah.
And to me, rye, I'm on the fence about rye. It depends on the beer.
Correct.
Yeah. I love it in this beer. I think it's great. I used to like, I can drink a rye IPA if the brewer's done really, really well with it. Remember Sierra Nevada's Ruthless Rye?
Ruthless Rye.
Come
was
on,
my,
that was fantastic.
That was great beer. I love that beer.
But then I've had others where it's just a little too much. But this one, it's very nice. And then, of course, you said rosemary's in it.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Fresh rosemary, handpicked the night before out of my garden.
And where in the process does that go in the beer?
So we add it into the boil. I kind of treat it like the bay leaves in the pepperwood.
Okay.
So it goes in late in the boil just to pull off those oils without... Again, boiling the plant material so much that you get that polyphenol astringency.
But you're throwing in straight up sprigs of rosemary.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Full
okay.
twigs.
How do you know about how, like, how many pounds were you talking here?
So, yeah, so this was an old homebrew, so I did have like a ballpark to work with, mm-hmm. luckily.
Mm-hmm.
Cuz with any spice, so easy to overdo it.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Anyone who cooks, like you said, you mm-hmm. know, it's like you can just push it, but at some point, it's just not palatable anymore.
Absolutely. Especially something like rosemary, mm-hmm. which I've never met anybody who doesn't love rosemary, but I've also never met anybody who can't tell when you put too much in.
Right.
Because yeah. it can yeah. be so overpowering.
Yes.
Yeah. So yeah. you have to be careful.
So this was about, I want to say about a pound in a 300-gallon batch.
I see. Okay.
Yeah. So you really don't need much.
No, you really don't. Same yeah. as like in a sauce. You really don't yeah. need much.
No.
You just you yeah. want it to be there. You want to notice it. That's how I would describe this. I notice it. I think there's a lot of beers that come in here that I say, oh, I wouldn't have picked that out if you didn't tell me.
Mm-hmm.
This is not one. I notice yeah. it. And I think yeah. that's what you want, right? You
yeah.
want to be able to
you
tell.
You want to kind of just right there.
Yeah.
Right?
Especially on the finish, just, the dryness. Mm-hmm. It accentuates the dryness, which is really nice.
Yeah, it does. And I think it works good with that rye earthiness.
Yes.
You know, I talked to Cody about this. The original inspiration of making this beer was a bread.
Okay.
Yeah, a traditional German spiced rye bread.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
That sounds delicious already. I can right? see that as the inspiration. Because I also was going to say, without the rye, I already would have said maybe it wouldn't have worked out.
Mm-hmm. No.
You needed I that so, backbone. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You
true.
Know.
That body. That.
True.
Yeah. It's also beautiful in color. I mean, it's I got like a deep red to it.
I kept trying. I was kept bugging him, like, what's the color? What's the color? Because I'm trying to.
Yeah. This is another one that if I put that's on great. Our tap number 10 here, I think people would look at it. People looking for that Blue Moon would look at it and go, oh, that's not what I was asking for. And I'd say, why don't you give it a try? And they'd love it.
Right. Mm-hmm.
I really do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, some subtle spice to it, but that permeates through.
Yeah.
Are you using old hops in this, or is it fresh hop? What's the...
No, it's just T90 pallets, okay. you know, so just for those numbers out there, it's just what bulk hop is used, like, most of the time. It's just right,
yeah.
squished down pallets of hop.
And what are they?
So I think I just used Willamette for this, which is also what I use for the Pepperwood. It's a hop... It's kind of underrated. Like, it fell off the radar. You know, it was used in the olden days of starting West Coast IPAs, you know, back in the day, because it was a very prevalent hop, you know, originating sure. out of Willamette Valley, Oregon. But I love it. Honestly, one of my favorites.
Just a workhorse.
It's a workhorse. It's never aggressive
mm-hmm.
or pungent. It's just got a very lovely kind of florally earthy
okay.
Backbone.
And which fits very well in this style.
It does, yeah.
Yeah, I'm guessing you're not looking for more than florally earthy in your hops across the board, right? Like, you're not looking for dank. You're not looking for diesel.
Oh, no.
Yeah, yeah.
No.
You want it to complement no. the yeast.
Yeah, that's one thing. And also, I don't want my beer to taste like I'm smoking a joint.
Yeah. 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 Sometimes I do, but in this case, I don't. yeah.
Yeah, because I feel like even when you did your West Coast Pilsner, that was still not aggressively dank. It was balanced. It definitely had the pine orange character, mm-hmm. but it wasn't that super over the top. Decent.
Yeah, and I do definitely appreciate that about like all these New World hops, right? This is how characterful they are, how much citrus they have to offer, how much pine, right? Other fruit characters that come out. I mean, it's sometimes kind of mind-boggling that you have the same plant, you know, produce all these compounds
yeah.
that make all these flavors. Yeah, yeah, it's yeah. remarkable.
This is fantastic.
I love this beer. This when I'm such a big fan of this beer.
Yeah.
This is everything I want as a beer geek.
Yeah.
Just, And palatable. I could have three of these, and I'd be happy. I'd be right. great. I'd be
like, and I like sometimes, you know, making a beer where people read the description, and you're like, what?
What?
Yeah. yeah.
Put rosemary in a saison? What's going into you?
yeah.
Taste it.
All right, well, I want to make sure we talk about more beer, because I think our listeners are really going to want to hear your take. So let's get through the story about the family, too. So... The families, I'll do a quick summary so then you can give me the detail. But the families came together because you started dating, I think, an American.
Yep.
Okay. But did you start, so Amber is her name, also works with the company, right?
Yep.
Okay. Did you meet her while you were in Belgium, or you met her here?
I met her here in my sophomore year of high school.
Oh, right. Okay. Yeah.
So we actually started dating right before I went to Belgium by myself for that summer.
Got it.
Yeah.
Nice.
And, and then came back, started brewing. A couple months later, we had we were going to have our first Thanksgiving together as the two families.
Ah.
And so we invited her father, Reed, to come to a brew with us.
Okay.
And up until that point, you know, he was just your classic domestic beer drinker.
Okay.
You know, your yeah. light lagers. That was his gig. And I'm happy to say that we actually kind of completely took him off of that.
Amazing. Yeah.
Yeah. He wasn't into craft beer that much because, you know, the really old West Coast IPA was just too intense, too bitter.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and so he stayed away from it. But then, you know, we opened up the door of Belgian beer to him and he fell in love with it. And so we were just homebrewing, the three of us, me, my dad, and her dad.
Okay.
Ever since.
Amazing. Yeah. Got it. So they became fast friends, your dad and her dad, sounds like, mm-hmm. over beer, right? Keep homebrewing all these years. So then at the kind of fast forward here to 2021, I think, if I remember yeah. right, when your dad finds his brewery, he talks to Amber's dad too?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, this was, I mean, kind of already a plan, like in the works. Like we already talked about it. We'd already won homebrew awards and
okay.
compared our beer with, you know, other local craft breweries that were making Belgians, and we're like, no, our stuff is up to snuff. We could do this.
Okay.
Is
this a thing where, and I don't mean this to be a chauvinist question, so listeners, forgive me. Sometimes we can ask questions that are sort of gender related. Does Amber and like your mom think that you guys are crazy with this idea? Are you just going nuts in the garage and they're like, what the fuck is happening out there? Or are they like, oh no, this is, we think they can do this too?
I'm sure that went through their mind at some point.
Okay.
At this point, I think they're past that.
I would say by now. Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, Andrea's working the tap room every night. Yeah, okay. She should probably yeah. be over it by now.
Yeah. No. She's got it down, and she sees how much people love the beer, and
right,
so
right.
they're everyone actually is very everyone in the family is very supportive of it.
Okay.
And
I just really think that, because like with any family, at, you know, venture like that, especially when you get into a hobby together, mm-hmm. when you start talking about going pro, there's like, well, first of all, you better be very good at it, which it sounds like you were. You guys are winning awards with homebrew and stuff. But there's still this always this voice, wherever mm-hmm. it comes from, that's like, I don't know, guys, maybe just keep brewing the beer in the garage and keep your keep your jobs. Like, do we have to go crazy with this? And I do think it's the dreamers and the people mm-hmm. who really want to go for it that succeed in life, right? So I'm certainly proud of you and glad you went for it, but I'm just trying to get to the bottom of like how it went.
No, yeah. I agree. I especially in the beginning, I kind of had this mindset of like, no, we have to be crazy. Like,
yeah,
if you're not crazy, you don't do this.
Yeah.
Right? But if you don't do this, it will never happen.
Right?
So it was about the opportunity. It was all kind of lining up with me being in my last year, the other brewery being for sale. You know, it was all kind of lining up.
Sure. Sort of fortuitous how it worked out.
Yeah. And so then, you know, I graduated that year, 21, and hopped on a plane back to California and started running a brewery.
Immediately the brewmaster.
Yep.
Was that a thing between you and your dad where maybe he was like, hey man, I've been the brewmaster at home this whole time? Or did he you know, really believe in your degree and your background? And
he did. He yeah. did. And okay. I was kind of the one developing the new recipes too with
okay.
the homebrew. You know, our very first award was for the Pepperwood.
Nice.
And so that was like kind of always been our kind of go-to beer.
Yeah.
And so
did you know then that was going to be your flagship?
We had to.
That? Yeah.
We had to. It was a little bit logistically difficult because you can't just purchase Meyer lemon peels. You know, it's like, mm-hmm. and I wasn't quite ready to throw a whole Meyer lemon puree, which you can get in there as a replacement. I didn't think that was going to be appropriate.
Yeah.
And the same with the bay laurel.
Yeah,
exactly. You're just going for the oil. You don't want that like full fruit pulp kind of, you know, character.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And so we kind of knew we had to. It was a fan favorite. From when we were home brewing, it was our award winner. It was so interesting. It totally fit that vibe too of just a really, you know, kind of authentically made Belgian beer that's just inspired by the local scene.
Sure.
Right. And it's like, these are things you can only find here.
Yeah.
So now you have a completely original Belgian beer that could have only been created
here in Sonoma.
Here in Sonoma.
I like that. Were the dads retired at this point?
No.
Or they had jobs?
They had jobs.
Did they quit the jobs?
Nope.
Okay.
Well, one of them did.
Smart.
Okay. One of them did, but that was kind of the plan. It wasn't right off the bat. In the beginning, it was just me, my mom, who did not have a job. She's put in countless hours, for no really financial contribution.
Sure, yeah.
And then my dad, he kept his day job, you know, to keep some money coming in, right?
Okay, yeah.
And then my to-be father-in-law, we took him on, I want to say, when was it? It was August of 22, I believe.
Okay.
Yeah, that's when we...
So probably not even a year after you opened.
Nope. Yeah. Yep, correct.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, you need help. I mean, sometimes you got to roll the dice sometimes, right?
Yeah.
So he was ready to do that.
Yeah, he was, he'd had his job for a very long time, and he was kind of ready to move on, and that was the part of his, drive to do the brewery, too. He was ready for a career change.
Yeah. You know what I love? Late in life career changes. And the gumption it takes to do it. I'm being serious, right? Because it happens to a lot of people. Some people, it happens like they didn't want to have to do it, like it was forced upon them. Others find like a passion, and they're like, yeah, fuck it, I'm going to go for this. No matter how you look at it, I always think it's a cool story for people, especially in the U.S. where like retirement is such an issue. There's not a big social safety net, despite what people say.
It's kind of frowned down upon. You have to explain it to your friends, your family, and they're kind of like, what are you doing?
You know what I do? I stand up and I applaud for that. Yeah. I think it's a
ballsy move.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a bold and a ballsy move.
Yep.
By the way, not even a son-in-law yet. Not for you, but you see what I mean. Like, you got your families aren't even legally entwined yet, except under the brewery, right?
Yep.
So I commend this guy. He's like, let's go for it.
Oh, yeah, no. And he's, I get that a lot, too. Sometimes it's like, my lead brewer is my, to be father-in-law.
Yeah.
And I get people that are like, oh, that must suck.
Oh, Reed is awesome.
I'm like, no, I mean, he's my right-hand man, a lot of the stuff I can't do without him. I can always trust him to do everything right. And, sometimes like my brother will sometimes come in when he's not in college just to come in and help out. And he'll comment like, yeah, man, you and Reed, like, same wavelength. Like, you guys share three words and you guys have shared the whole
nice
plan. Like, you got
I've brewed with them and packaged with them, and that's the vibe. Is they're wordless. They know what you're
doing. That's great. What more could he ask for?
Yeah.
All right, Cody, can we try another beer?
I think we can. Henrik needs to...
I'll drink faster, no worries.
Well, you guys pick a beer. In the meantime, I did want to ask about some fermentation profile stuff. So the two saisons I've had so far, we had the pepperwood. And then we just had the, I don't know what this one was called.
The Midnight Garter.
That's right.
Yeah.
Same yeast for both of these? Do you have like a house? Okay.
No.
So you like to mix it up?
Yes and no.
Okay.
So we only have a handful of yeast strains that we kind of use for our day-to-day brews. The pepperwood uses a diastaticus negative farmhouse ale strain. So it doesn't ferment as dry as the original homebrew did, actually. And that is the yeast that is used in the Midnight Gardener.
Okay.
That is mostly to prevent contamination issues. Because this is a yeast that can ferment much bigger sugars.
I see.
Than regular brewer's yeast. And so for our... kind of higher volume beers that we send through our bottling line, we try to keep that out of there.
Okay.
Yeah. Because, basically what that means, if that yeast were to get in a bottle that does have those sugars still in it.
It'll keep going.
It'll keep going, and that can be a sitting bomb on a grocery market shelf.
Okay.
Right. It's not a wild Saccharomyces, so, but it kind of has those some of those characteristics.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So it produces the very similar ester and phenolic profile to the original. And it was bred from that. So
if you're saying, and forgive my ignorance, but if you're saying it's a diastatic negative, that means, that says to me that there's a other side. There's another yeast that's a diastatic positive.
Correct. And that's what's in the Midnight Gardener.
And that means, sorry, that it won't continue fermenting?
No, that it will.
Ah,
that
it will. I see. Okay.
That's why it's positive and negative is in reference to the presence of a certain gene.
Okay.
Yeah.
Got it. And that gene might dictate how far down it's going to keep eating through long-chain sugars?
Yeah. Short
chain.
Oh, okay. Yes.
Yeah. So the diastaticus yeast will actually have enzymes that go outside of the cell wall and into the solution and ferment the sugars.
Got it.
Normal Saccharomyces won't do that, so it typically doesn't ferment as much. But the diastaticus will definitely...
Okay.
Positive.
I found a smart salesman.
Yeah, and you need that, right? Like, and you know what? Like, 9 out of 10 of the accounts don't care, but the one that does, you can answer.
Yes, right. Exactly.
Right. So, yeah, I love it. Okay, so different yeast because of that. You wanted to make sure the fermentation sort of stopped where you wanted it to stop. Put it in the bottle, everything's going to be okay.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
The Midnight Gardener, it's that our sort of seasonal opportunity to experiment and try something new. And we're not putting it through the bottling line, so it's...
And so it was actually kind of made to use as little of the same equipment as possible. Yeah. So we had to
But you are bottling it.
Yeah.
So we had some bottles that we manually did. Yeah.
This guy is manually bottling beers for me.
I was going to say,
samples. Thank God.
You're not manually bottling a batch to sell. You're manually bottling a batch to bring here, to bring for samples. Yeah. Everything else is going to just ferment, or is going to stay in stainless until you serve it. Yeah.
Yes, correct. Yeah. We do have like a manual filler that we do for our barrel age program.
Okay.
Because that's kind of the same story with those mixed fermentation cultures. But this was actually the start of a project that hopefully will grow into beers that we will bottle. But again, it's mostly with a manual filler. Very small batch, more artisanal.
How many barrels do you think you're going to produce this year, just out of curiosity?
This year?
Well, what'd you do last year?
Last year we got still close to 600.
Okay.
Which was already great because we doubled the year before.
Nice.
Next year, I'd love to reach the 1,000 mark.
Okay. It's a big jump.
It is a big jump.
Cole's got his work cut out for him.
Oh, yeah, he does. Yeah, he does. but yeah, we're going to, you know, produce a couple more because up until now, we've only bottled our 5 kind of flagship beers, and we're going to try and do more.
Sure.
Try and do other beers and have
like
some more
the
fun
monthly
with it.
Releases, you said, things like that.
Yeah.
And plus, you just mentioned your spontaneous, but that's brand new, right? It's your first commercial spontaneous program. Is that right?
Yep.
Okay.
That's correct. So, so that's something that we did as homebrewers. We're from the Lambic region in Belgium.
Okay.
And so that's something that's very near and dear to our hearts. You know, my dad grew up drinking that stuff. And we tried it as homebrewers, succeeded. Very good. It was like, okay, this is promising. Then when we went commercial, we were like, okay, well, it's kind of a special kind of thing, right? But I finagled something and I got something going.
Are you in December? Are you doing the approach where you're gonna buy this wild yeast, or are you gonna do like the Russian River approach where they have I think Vinny calls it like a synambic, right?
Yes, synambic. He's the one who coined the term.
Yeah, yeah.
We're very familiar with that, and that's one of the reasons why we were so inspired, because we know all the Belgian breweries, and then when Vinny started doing it, we're like, wait, we're down the street. Like, we can do this too.
So that's your route.
Yeah.
Okay.
So we did it completely spontaneous in a cool ship. We just captured the native microflora of Sonoma County.
Nice. Yeah.
And we did 5 barrels, and they're all alive.
Okay.
And bubbling.
And you'll use those 5 barrels as like the heart to inoculate this program.
Yes, kind of. But every single one should get the cool ship method, where it's put outside and you try and capture the native microflora.
But you still need, because the nature of lambic, so that's great, that's your start, but you're still going to blend.
Yes.
Something you've had slightly more control over.
Yeah, you have to. Okay. It's the only way to make a program like that work. I mean, you can imagine when you're inviting pretty much like at least 10 different microorganisms that are all duking it out inside of that barrel. One's going to swing one way, the other one's going to swing another way. You're going to have barrels that are kind of, you can kind of describe all of them as rank.
Interesting. Yeah.
But you're going to have some that are kind of kind of acidic. Some are going to be more butyric acid. Some are going to taste very tart, and it's going to be very citric acidy. And some are going to be more lactic acidy. And they all kind of have their own pros and negatives.
Okay.
Every one of them. And then the trick is, in the end, which barrels do I throw together, right? The blending is to make a very tasty, palatable, highly complex sour.
Right.
And that's the true craft.
And so I'm glad you said it that way. You know, one of my favorites of all time, and it's probably everybody's, is Cantillon, of course. Mm-hmm. And that brewmaster, of course, has described it as like, my art is blending. It's what I do. I mean, he won't deny that he's a brewer, but he totally downplays brewing.
Oh, yeah.
And says the true art of a Belgian lambic brewer is blending. Correct. Much just like a winemaker.
Yeah.
Right. So I'm glad that you're taking it on that same way, you know.
Definitely. And that's one of those things that, again, kind of comes back to our palate. And kind of how me and my dad have been so into these beers and studying them for so long. I mean, my dad's been drinking lambic since he was 11.
Right. Okay. Yeah.
So he's very familiar with how it should taste.
Yeah. That's.
And when you're making these blends, that's kind of where it comes down to.
Okay.
They sometimes talk about this too in Belgium is, you know, all these lambic breweries, they're all families. And a lot of times they're dependent on the next generation to take it over because they're the ones who are going to start tasting these barrels at the age of 11, 12, 13.
Sure.
That's when they start.
Yeah. So this is where you pass the torch because that's some true professionalism, I think, like a generational professionalism.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah. All right. What's in my glass now?
This is our double. This is our classic Belgian double.
Nice.
Yeah. So it's ours kind of lands on, you know, a little bit of the darker side, but we like it that way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A lot of obviously kind of dark fruit, plum coming out of there. Mm-hmm. It's fantastic. And again, not too phenolic.
Yes.
No.
Which is what turned me away from Belgian beers so much longer
same
ago.
Here, Justin.
Yeah.
I feel like I was turned off from Belgian beers for so long because they were sweet and they were very banana, clove heavy. And
I want to talk more about the malt character of this beer than I do. So I was going to say, like, to me, a comparison is like, it's closer to a really good barley wine.
Yeah, or
in some ways.
Which
makes me just want to talk about the malt.
Yeah.
And then it's kind of just like an honorable mention that the yeast did something awesome.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Right? Like, because the phenolics are there.
Yes.
But it's just enough to, like, make it be what it's supposed
it out,
to be.
Keep it crisp, keep you wanting to drink more.
How are you keeping that down? The phenolics and
just a well balanced recipe is what it comes down to.
Okay, it's got to be some fermentation temperature.
I don't let it go completely crazy. I have some like the rosemary one that we had, for example.
Mm-hmm.
That was a complete free rise fermentation.
Interesting.
Did not use any cooling.
Okay.
Did not even crash it at the end. That was a completely naturally made Belgian beer.
Wow.
Our core beers, I try and aim for a bit more consistency. And we do want our beers not to be over phenolic because just like for the both of you guys, we find a lot of people are just kind of turned off by the Belgian beer, and then that's all they can talk about Belgian beer, and that's all they have in their head.
Well, they've been burned by so many of them.
And so we're kind of trying to show that, you know, Belgian beer is, it's a big spectrum of beer. And my take on it is it's about balance, right? Like when we think about like, okay, German beer, I mean, I'm not trying to generalize any particular beer culture.
Sure,
right?
Yeah. But
German beers, they can be quite, you know, malt forward. That's where they're going for. That's what they want to showcase. You know, and then in America, it's become, you know, all about the hop. That's what you want to showcase, right?
Yeah,
is that,
yeah.
that big hop. And I like to think of Belgium. It's like, no, you're trying to make a beautiful combination where you're going to taste hop, you're going to taste malt,
yeah,
and you're going to taste the yeast. And yeah. the yeast is supposed to be part of your beer,
yeah,
not
yeah.
overpowering your beer.
Right.
Right.
It's a great way to describe it.
Yeah.
You know, and look, it's a way to describe balance, which what you keep saying, but I do think it's important that you go further like you just did, yeah. because every brewer says balance, right?
Oh, yeah.
But then they hand me the beer and I'm like, yeah, well, you didn't really do that.
Well, they say a balanced IPA. Yeah. You're like, well, what yeah. does that mean? I mean, it's an IPA.
Yeah.
It's supposed to be extreme.
Yeah. No, that's a really great beer. I think, like... Yeah, Doppelbach is a better comparison than barley wine. It's
yeah,
Doppelbach
yeah.
with more nuances of all the ingredients that you just mm-hmm. described. Yeah. You know?
There's something magical about the longer fermentation in the Belgian yeast that really dries it out,
mm-hmm.
you know, where so many Doppelbachs or barley wines finish with that sweet, syrupy yeah. kind of thing. This is just dry and crisp. It still has the malt, so some people taste it and they're like, yeah, you know, it kind of tastes like a raisin. I'm like, okay, well, it's new to you.
It does.
You know, but, you know,
it's got like, raisin, it's got plum, it's yeah. got pepper, yeah. it's got...
And the pepper on the finish is exactly what I pick up, and that's, again, kind of the brand is a lot of this kind of pepper character from the yeah. Belgian yeast, and it accentuates the dryness. It makes you want to keep drinking more, and it's so nice.
Yep.
All right, let's do this. We're going to do another quick break.
Yeah.
And sounds when we good. Come back, it's going to be our last segment, but I've got a few things for us to talk about. We're going to have to talk about IPAs.
I know. Oh, yeah.
Surprise, everybody. We're going to have to talk about IPA. We're going to talk a little bit more about Belgian beer, of course, and we're going to find out what's up next for Cuvée. So hang in there. You're listening to The Session, and we'll be right back. Welcome back to The Session. Thank you for hanging out with us today. We are still speaking with Cuvée and drinking some amazing Belgian beer, Belgian-style beer, and enjoying every drop of it. We've got a lot more to do here in our last segment. Before we jump into the quad that's in our glass, and I think we're going to taste one of your wild beers too, I got to ask about IPA. Because it doesn't sound like that was ever in the wheelhouse yet. I know you're about to brew one for the Bistro Double IPA Festival, and I think you won an award recently for an IPA, too?
Yeah. So last year, when we submitted all our beers to the Best of California craft beer competition that they have at the state fair.
Yeah.
And yeah, sure enough, second place with our
no kidding.
Hoppy Dawn Belgian IPA.
Oh, still a Belgian though. Okay.
Oh yeah.
Okay.
So every IPA that we make, we still use a Belgian yeast.
Interesting. Okay.
You know, well, like I like to think of them as kind of my gateway beers. Like
yeah.
I'm supposed to be able to make, you know, IPAs because right, it's so much of the market.
Sure.
And so we just have our own take on it.
Do you like IPAs yourself? Like you buy them at the store?
Or occasionally.
Not so much? Okay.
From breweries that I know I like their IPAs.
Yeah, okay.
Like, you know, like, I mean, everyone loves like Inhume, right, from Ghost mm-hmm. Town. I mean, this is such a good beer. Good.
Great
right?
beer. So like know. On a Sunday afternoon... Is it rare that you reach for an IPA, or is that, you know, or a pale ale, or a common?
Nah, it's actually pretty rare. Actually, okay. Funny thing, on a Sunday, I'm actually more likely to have a cider.
Okay, yeah.
Hey.
I'm a cider fan, too.
Yeah.
Too. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And I think, yeah, just side note, cideries are getting better and better, too.
Oh, yeah.
So
oh,
I just enjoy them more and more.
I mean, we're down the street from an absolutely remarkable cider.
Which one?
Tilted Shed.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. Very, I know about them.
Very small, but yeah, like, you know, mm-hmm. some of your regulars here, Mike and Sammy, that's how they found us.
Okay.
They're members there. They drove by and they're like, what? Yeah. Belgian brewery?
So there, yeah. And they're big fans of yours, too. They're mm-hmm. nice people. Okay. So,
IPAs.
You still like to make them, but it's always going to have a Belgian yeast.
Yes. Okay. So if we make them, that's how we make them. Because actually, there are a lot of hoppy beers in Belgium. It's different, though. Like, if an American would try a hoppy Belgian beer made in Belgium, you would be like, this is a pale ale. Yeah. It's not an IPA.
Yeah. Yeah.
It is not overboard.
Okay.
But they are becoming a lot more popular, and actually Duvel Moordgat, they're kind of pushing that envelope.
Okay.
They have, you know, a lot of ownership of craft breweries in the U.S. They're actually the fifth largest independent craft brewery in the U.S. Mm-hmm. because of how much they
Firestone.
Own.
Yeah, Firestone,
Walker, Omegang, the Boulevard 7.
Oh, that's right.
That's another one. Yeah. And they have, I think, two or three more. But they have access to all these, you know, great New World hops, which were unseen in Belgium before they started bringing them in and making, you know, Duvel Triple Hop Citra and Triple Hop Cashmere and all these really, really great hoppy Belgian beers.
Yeah.
And it does work. And sometimes I've had other brewers, you know, comment to me like, yeah, we tried this for a while and it was so hard to get, you know, American hops to line up with Belgian yeast profiles. And I'm like,
sure.
Well,
it's been natural for you.
I don't know. I just, but me and Belgian yeast have always gotten along.
Yeah,
so when I introduced it to American hop, it said, okay, I'll try this.
Yeah.
Well, I think you have, you must have this understanding that's not just about attenuation and either being in the way or out of the way. You have more of an understanding of exactly what phenols are going to come out and might maybe how they play with the hops that you like.
That's my goal. When I make a beer, I'm trying to get them to collaborate in the beer,
right?
And no, that's been working like pretty well. Obviously, they loved it at the state fair,
right? So when you do a double IPA, and you're going to enter it into the Bistro Festival,
I haven't decided yet, but there we are. Yes, we are. Yeah, Cody just said it.
So in your brain, then how are you thinking about this double IPA? I just kind of want a picture of, you know.
So we've made this beer twice already.
Okay.
So the Devil's Bell came around the first year we were in operation as kind of an homage to actually just that Sonoma County big IPA in February thing, right? The Pliny the Younger origin story, right? And all the breweries do it, right?
Yeah,
all the local breweries do it, and it's cool. It's cool to have those kind of, you know, seasonal beer traditions.
Yeah,
I mean, you know, as someone coming in from Belgium, I love leaning into that.
I really do.
You know, it's one of the reasons we went for it, because we love the whole craft beer scene here, because it kind of does remind us of Belgium, right? Mm-hmm. It's just that diversity, that play, that creativity. And so, yeah, first year we did it. It worked out great. It was very popular. Of course, we're just down the street from Russian River Brewing, so it's good for us to have one of these big IPAs on when the Pliny guys come in and they're like, oh, give me something big and hoppy. You know?
Yeah.
Like, okay. And then last year we did it. Again, it was a big hit. This year again, and our
so how
goal with
how
the beer,
Belgian is it? Is kind of what I'm
so
getting at. You see
good
what I mean?
Question. Good question. So, I kind of this beer. The biggest there's two things Belgian about it. Three things.
Okay.
Three things. I make it.
Yep.
That's one.
Okay.
I use a Belgian yeast strain in it. And I do ferment it somewhat like a Belgian. I do cut it off at a certain temperature range.
Okay.
But I do kind of, I knock out at kind of a lower temp and I let the yeast kind of rise up in temp itself. I like to push it by its own biological activity. And that's when I notice that it's producing the right esters. The other thing is I use a mixture of European hops and American hops.
Okay.
And it's really unique.
What are the American hops?
This year, because I, just like a lot of them in Sonoma County, I make a different version every year.
Okay.
This year, we're using Chinook, CTZ, Willamette, and those are the American hops.
Okay.
Yeah.
I love Chinook, by the way.
Oh, it's the greatest.
Yeah.
It's the greatest.
Yeah.
Underrated workhorse.
Oh, boy.
Also in the award winner, by the way.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Love it.
Yep. And then for the European hops, this year it's going to be Styrian Goldings and Hallertau.
Okay.
Yeah.
Just like when you hear an IPA recipe and you hear those hops, you're like, what?
Yeah.
Wait, what?
Yeah. Right.
Something I love to do.
What about the what about the SRM of this double IPA? Are you on the darker, old school side, or is it like lighter?
So it is slightly lighter. Actually, that's one thing about my Belgian IPA that we make all the time.
Yeah.
That's really old school.
Okay.
It's got, you know, Crystal 60 in there.
Okay.
Just a little bit of it just to get a little bit of a malt backbone, and it's got that nice, like, you know, reddish copper color to it.
So many people, when they try that beer, look at me like, oh my gosh, you brought back the beer I loved
from
2002.
Yeah.
Oh, thank you.
What percent, when you say a little bit of Crystal, what? Give me a percent range we're talking here. 10? 5?
It's somewhere in there.
Yeah.
It's not ridiculous.
Yeah.
I think it's even less than 10. Yeah. Just a little.
And is
but
it
has
just,
a nice color to it. It has a nice, like, you know, deeper kind of copper color. Yeah. Which,
and are you using, like, European Pilsner, too? Like, Belgian Pilsner malt?
So I don't use Belgian Pilsner malt.
Okay.
I use American Pilsner malts. I used to when we started, actually. I made all the beers with Belgian Pilsner malt.
World events happened.
Yeah, you know, as soon as Ukraine got attacked by Russia, prices of European grain went through the freaking roof. It was like,
okay.
Can't, you know, it went from being just a little bit more expensive than the local stuff to twice the price.
Okay.
And then I switched over to Proximity, which is just a national brand, and they're very vertically integrated, which I do really appreciate. And honestly, their product's great. I've had a lot of good success with it.
Okay.
And, you know, and it's in all my beers. Actually, I believe that this quad is, actually, it might be virtually almost all Proximity malts.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's jump to the quad now.
Let's do it.
We're here to talk Belgian beer anyway.
And this is a special beer. That's a big brewing process. This dude was spending a lot of time brewing this beer.
We tried to go all out for this one. It had been the most requested beer for me to make.
Okay. The style, you mean?
Yes. Yeah, the quad. But I was always kind of reluctant to make it just because, well, as a home brewer, we never made one. And as a brewer, we already talked about this, we prefer kind of lighter beers. So we're like, okay. And then the other thing was, it's a super dark, really high ABV beer.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, how am I going to move this? Like, you know, because you got to think about that when you're making these beers, right?
Of course.
Like, how can I sell, you know, a good amount of kegs of this stuff if it's so high in alcohol and it's going to move so slow? But I decided to go out for it. The only way for me to reach these really high gravities on the system that we have, which is really not, you know, we just bought it from the previous breweries. It's not really set up for making Belgians, but, we do make it work. We get creative. But I did a full, like, a 2 or 3-step decoction mash.
You did? Okay. You went for it.
I went for it.
Yeah.
And
is this a gas-fired kettle or a steam jacket? What do you got?
So the mash tun is unheated. Mash tun's unheated.
Okay, so just infusion.
Just infusion, exactly. And that's kind of what makes it hard to make the high gravity Belgians.
Okay. Okay.
So for the triple, we use a partial decoction. For this one, we had to go full decoction.
Okay.
Yeah. Luckily, though, the boiling kettle that we use as the intermediate vessel to reheat the portions in is direct fire.
Okay.
And that thing heats up awfully fast.
Got it.
So actually, at that point, you just got to watch it closely before you make caramel.
You know? but that's sort of probably where you're getting some of your melanoidin anyway.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Exactly. Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Okay.
I can taste it in here too. It's dry, but it still has this nice kind of caramel kind of sweetness.
And it added some just great body to this beer, you know. And it's like, we also talk about like Klingon Belgian beer and the foam and stuff. And I'm like, I just love how it hangs onto the glass and
it
everything.
Does.
And
I'm what's drinking the, mine too fast.
What's the ABV?
10.3.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
It smells fantastic. I love, I've been to very famous Belgian breweries who you can drink their single, their double, their triple, and their quad. Yeah. And there's, you can tell that they're in the family.
Yes.
And yours has that.
The double.
Right. The smell from the double to the aroma from the double to this one, kind of that the dark plum that's coming out of it's still there. Like, I just love that it's the same family.
Yeah.
I just finally got to the big brother.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's graduated. Exactly what it is. So our triple is a little bit. It is off because our triple is a golden ale.
Mm-hmm. Ah, right. Okay.
That style. That's the style.
Yeah, but it's kind of interesting because in Belgium we don't talk about styles that way. We really don't. You know, when you go to an Abbey brewery, they have their numbers of beers, right?
Yeah.
And they're just increasing alcohol. And like typically, like, or technically, in the one below the quad is the triple. But in Belgium, we tend to only refer to golden or pale Abbey beers of that percentage as triples.
We
don't refer to dark beers as triples.
Mm-hmm. I see.
And so that's why I wanted my double to represent our best version of a double, which is dark usually.
Yeah.
And our triple to represent the best version of what we know as a triple.
I love that. Yeah.
But that being said, the quad is usually a souped up version of the double.
Okay.
So that's, we definitely stuck with that. So this is definitely the big brother of the double.
So you're just taking that almost same recipe and amping it up. There's not a bunch of changes there.
Exactly.
As it should be. And same yeast too?
Yes. The same yeast strain.
Yeah.
How about the coriander, Henrik? Did you kind of increase the coriander?
Actually, slightly, if I remember correctly, but I didn't want to overdo it.
Yeah.
Because
I
felt like if I would increase it to the same amount, it would just be overpowering.
I agree completely, because the double already has, it's a nice amount.
It really does,
And then here you're kind of letting the malt come forward.
Exactly. You're just kind of providing a stronger carrier for that character.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a good beer. It's a trouble. Right. This beer's a troublemaker.
It's a troublemaker. Sure,
we were amazed when we released it. I mean, we released it on our anniversary party.
Okay.
And you know, we're a modestly small brewery, so a lot of times when we release a new beer, it's not like we're gonna blow a half barrel of it. This beer we did.
Okay.
And it was 96 degrees outside.
Everyone was having oh my God, that was a good time.
I'm like, you guys are nuts.
Yeah. But I love it. Tents out for people to crash. It's a really nice beer. I'm glad. So we have it on tap here at the Hop Grenade. I'm going to guess it'll be here for about another week. So if you're local, come on down and try it here. You guys have a tasting room at QA?
We have a tasting room in Windsor. Really easy to combine with visiting Russian River Brewing in Windsor.
There we go.
Just down the street.
Okay.
Yep.
And the cidery you mentioned.
So. And the cider. Actually, we're in the Windsor Beverage District.
Okay.
Yeah.
Barley so and Vine. There's all sorts of places.
Exactly. There's 14 wineries. There's a distillery. There's a cidery. There's a craft beer tap room. Two big brewery. Well, one big brewery. Yeah. One modest sized brewery.
Sure. Yeah. All right, well, we've got one more beer to try, and in the meantime, since we're running out of time, I want to make sure we get to some of the things that are happening at the brewery. We already mentioned that you're trying to do seasonal releases every month, if you can.
Yep.
And the first one is Midnight Gardener, which is coming out this Friday.
Yeah.
Only available at the tap room?
Correct, yeah.
So go check that out. And then is there a way people can sign up to hear about more of these, or do we just keep checking the website?
Oh, definitely. If you... you know, sign up on any of our social media platforms, Facebook or Instagram, you'll get updates about releases. And you can also go to the website, sign up for the email list. You'll get typically the most detailed information on that one.
Perfect. And of course, as I mentioned, it's CUVERbrewing.com, CUVERbrewing.com. You can go learn more about it. There's a great, their whole story is there. You can look at what their regular beers are, their seasonal beers. It's a good website that'll keep you informed. And I think you guys have a Pink Boots collaboration coming up in March, too. Oh,
yes, we do.
White IPA.
Yep, white IPA. I'll do a first drop of the name here, considering it hasn't been done anywhere, so you'll be in the loop.
I love it.
By her bootstraps.
Nice.
Just a note to, you know, hardworking women who are just willing to go the extra mile to get things done. You know?
Heck yeah.
And so, you know, I work with my mom and my fiance both, and they both put in a lot of hours, you know, always keep going for the dream, right? And that's what they're doing. And so this is an appreciation to them and to Love all women. So,
and what makes a white IPA?
So it's our approach is taking a Belgian wit, and you know, we're not going to spice it. We're not going to put orange peels in it. We're taking the base of a Belgian wit,
okay,
and the yeast of a Belgian wit, and we're going to try and take the Pink Boots hop blend and showcase it the best way we can.
Nice.
In that beer.
I like that idea. That sounds like a delicious beer.
Yeah. So it'll be nice and sessionable, you know.
Yeah, it'll be dry.
5.2,
yeah,
you know,
5.
percent.
2,
so it'll kind of be like a session IPA. And
okay.
It'll be a good, you know, kind of start the spring beer.
Yeah. I remember white IPAs. I miss white IPAs. That was a thing for a minute.
Well, if it comes out,
you know,
if it comes out great, it might have to be one of the beers you bring to Spring Brews Festival, which is at the end of March.
Mm-hmm.
So keep that in mind. I would love to see that. All right, and then as we mentioned, we're going to see a double IPA at the Bistro IPA Festival. So I'm excited about that.
Got to convince Nick now, you know.
And then I read that you guys might try to put some of your beer in cans this year.
Ooh,
which I think is a cool idea.
Henrik, will you tell us more about
So we're gonna give it a whirl. We're still kind of, you know, figuring out the nitty-gritty on the labels and everything. That's all done in-house too, so sometimes it's you know, those projects kind of catch up on you. But yeah, we're gonna try and put some new beers, some lighter beers. Usually we're gonna go for in the 16-ounce can. I sometimes think it's kind of weird when we put like double IPAs and stuff that are 9% in 16-ounce cans. I'm like, is that really one serving of beer, really? You know. So I'm going for some lighter beers.
Okay.
More not necessarily experimental, but more kind of like hybrid beers.
Mm-hmm.
So they're not gonna be the ones that we already bottle. They're not gonna be my, you know, more traditional saisons and Belgian ales. They're gonna be more like lagers and
West Coast pills,
light wheats and stuff like that. Just, you know, those great sessionable, you know, active beers when you're out having fun, you know, when you're outdoors and stuff. So it needs to, that fits the can, right? That's what the can's for.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
Taking it into all those, you know, spaces and taking it with you.
Well, and this is where you get to re-educate us about Belgian beer too, that there are, that saisons and others, weren't meant to get us fucked up. They're meant to take to the beach. They were meant to chill at lunch with, right?
Yeah.
Like, so by putting in a can, you can sort of retell us the story of lighter Belgian beer.
True.
I think.
True. Yeah. That's going to be a part of it for sure.
Yeah.
The other thing too, though, is with the other beers and why I wouldn't put those in a can is I don't feel like I can do them justice.
Okay.
You know, Belgium's all about re-fermenting.
Yeah.
Right? We condition all our beers usually
in the bottle, in
the packaging.
Yeah.
And you can't really get high enough in a can before the can swells up.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I feel like if I were trying to make an authentic, original Belgian beer in a can, I would always fall short.
Sure,
so I need to take a different approach.
Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah. And you know, you don't just, and you know this because you're not doing it, you don't just have to follow the trends.
Mm.
You know, Vinny was on here and he's talked about how, like, by waiting out the can trend, he now stands out on the shelf as the only bottle.
I never
would have said that. I would have been like, yeah, bro, you should probably go switch to cans. That's what everybody's doing.
Yep.
And of course, he didn't not switch to cans as like a marketing tool at first. He didn't switch to cans because he felt like his beer wasn't going to be as good.
Yep.
He couldn't keep the O2 down low enough and so on and so forth. And of course, now you can find some stuff of his in cans. But overall, now I'm like, I'm looking at the shelf and the only bottle sticking up above all of them is a Russian
River
bottle.
It's a Russian River one. Yeah.
So, you know, you don't just got to follow the herd here.
No.
Yeah.
I mean, I've been pushing this guy since the beginning. You need to get cans. You need to get cans. He's tired of hearing it now.
Sure, sure.
But the thing is some of our biggest accounts we've gotten have been accounts that need bottles because they have shelf space.
Yeah.
It's sitting there. They have a bunch of dusty bottles that aren't moving and they need something to put there and we fit that.
Yeah.
So
like
it's so strange how like that's actually kind of one of our best features is we still do bottle beer.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of rare nowadays.
And they reach carbonation levels I can't get in the can.
Yeah.
Okay. I really like to stress that. It's
that little extra.
A little extra, exactly.
So this beer, right?
So now we've got your wild beer,
yes,
which is called
Wilde Rivieren.
that.
Yeah.
Can I just point out?
I wanted you to say it, Justin. I was waiting for you to say
I just want to point out to the listener, and I'm pretty sure I copied and pasted this, so I think I have the spelling right. You put in way more consonants than are actually there. It reads like,
Rivian,
even if I tried to put an accent on it, Rivirin.
Yeah.
But you added like L's.
Rivirin.
Say it again.
Rivirin.
Oh, no, okay. Rivirin. See, I thought you went Rivilirin. I thought you added an L in there, but just Rivirin.
That will Rivirin.
That's, see, that's an extra consonant.
Those sneaky Belgians, yeah. You know, you don't know whether it's, you know, Flemish or Dutch. Or
so this is your wild golden ale.
Yes.
I want to say this before you describe it to me. And it's, in fairness, it's because I know that you've now embraced the, like, sonambic, right? It does not taste like a Belgian wild ale, which would have just thrown me off. I'd have been like, well, so what is this? But because I've tasted the Russian River version, mm-hmm. I know where this comes from. This is a compliment. Like, I really think you guys have, like, a Sonoma house flora fauna flavor, because yeah. It's in there like a Russian River that I've tasted.
Yep.
So that's nice. I think that, like, I love being able to taste a region. Is yes. What I'm saying.
Yes.
Yeah.
And that, and I have to say, that's why I love that Vinny coined that term.
Yeah, yeah.
I really do. Because for us, it was just, like, so symbolic, too, that we, you know, we came from the only area in the world where this was being done, and it had a name, Lambic.
Yeah.
And then we moved to another place where a guy is making this 3 miles down the road from right. Our house.
Who is a fan of the Roots, by the way.
Exactly. Like, yeah. Big fan of the Roots.
Yeah.
And nails it.
Yeah.
And coins the term sonambic, and we're like, okay, well, for us then, that was like, now we're destined kind of to do this, at least to try it.
Yeah.
Right? Because it's really close to us.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
And I like that you do. And look, I'm going to be honest here, too, and I'm sorry, Vin. I didn't really like it at first. It did grow on me, but because it's different, right? Like, I'm mm-hmm. used to, I know my lambics. I was like, yeah, well, that's definitely different. I see what you're going for. But the difference, maybe, it just made it not my favorite. There's something about when you taste others, though, when it starts to become a thing, that you're, I don't know if it's just mental or how my palate works, but I now like his even better that I'm tasting yours, because now there's more of them. Does that make sense? Now I can tell, oh, I didn't like it, not because it wasn't great, but because it was different.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And now that I'm trying another breweries that has a similar character, I just start to like it more.
It is. Sometimes, you know, the first time I had a lambic in Belgium, I was like, what the hell is this?
What is that?
There's so many weird flavors in there. And, you know, someone gives you this and they tell you it's a beer. And that's sometimes, I think, what throws you off. Because
totally,
it does not taste like other beer.
The first time I had Russian River sour beers, I was told they were beers, and I tasted them, and I loved them. And I was like, this isn't a beer.
Right,
this is something completely different.
Like, but familiarity also just sort of helps you like things. Yeah. That's just how we work. I think it's how we're wired.
Yeah.
And so now that I'm having another one, it tastes familiar to me.
Yes.
And I like that.
Oh, I love this beer.
And so this beer is... So it's a combination of a beer that had some wild yeast in it that we pitched, that we actually let get a little bit too much on the acetic acid side.
Okay.
By not paying attention to it, to be quite honest.
Okay, yeah.
And I know, right?
No, like,
don't tell these things.
On this
don't
show,
tell
you
these
be
things.
Honest.
And then we were also barrel aging some of our triple with some mixed cultures.
Okay.
That was already going that direction. But when we blended this with the triple, the flavors just popped. Yeah. This by itself was not too appetizing in one direction. The triple was a little bit too bland after we re-fermented it in the barrel.
I see.
But when we added this to the other one, it just brought out all this fruit character. Mm-hmm. And it was a match made in heaven when we put these two together. And it's been selling really well. It was a very small project that we started before the brewery was even open. This was one of those.
So it's been around.
Oh, it's been around. It was barrel aged for 18 months.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
And it's only on draft at the in the tap
room.
No,
it's only by the bottle.
It's,
yes, only in the 750 corked and caged.
I see.
We have very little left, but luckily we did restart the program to get more barrels to make more of these blends because we all fell in love with it. It's my dad's favorite beer.
Nice.
Yeah. It's also my favorite beer.
It's delicious.
I love this style.
Ah, so good. Mm-hmm. All right, only available at the brewery, though.
Oh, yeah. There's a handful of stores that may still have some bottles out there.
Okay.
It's not too many. At the brewery is the best guarantee. Get it, yeah.
I'm glad you guys are doing it. We get asked about sours all the time. And let's be honest, like, sours in Belgians, not the most popular thing anymore as you experience every day trying to sell it, right?
Oh.
But we still get people coming in all the time asking for sours. And recently, we just have the same sours to offer. Not that Lou's not doing a great job buying them, but it's like, oh, have you had this brewery? You've had that brewery. Yeah, and people are like, yep, I've had that one. So I'm happy to have a new sour on the market that I can recommend. I'm happy to recommend this is what I'm saying. Yeah. This is a damn good sour.
Yeah, I feel like, what was it, 6-7 years ago, there were sours everywhere. Yeah, every brewery was pumping out their, you know, they had those barrels in the back they forgot about, and they're like, oh, let's bottle it up or cake it up. But, you know, they get expensive, and if the quality's not there, you know, customer regrets it, you know.
But I also just think as palates change, like the beer industry, we're in this weird, you know, phase right now, and it's everything's cyclical, including beer. And sour in Belgians are not the darling anymore. Hoppy beers are.
Yeah.
All of that is going to just keep rotating. Yeah. By the way, again, comes in the Saison, because it doesn't matter. The Saison just stays right in the middle as a workhorse. Yeah.
You gotta love it.
Yeah.
Like we've seen the Pilsners and the hoppy West Coast Pilsners.
Yeah,
stuff.
Yeah.
Coming back.
Well, thank you guys for coming in. I couldn't be more thankful for you sharing the beer. It's delicious. I am rejuvenated myself about Belgian beers, thanks to you. So I'm glad that Lewis found you for us, and I'm glad you came in to do a show. It's really great stuff.
Thanks so much for having us, Justin. It was really great.
I appreciate it. All right. So what's up next? You guys have more beer releases. On Friday, you're releasing Midnight Gardener, so head up to the brewery this weekend. You can check it out. And then keep an eye out on Cuvée for monthly releases, possibly cans, more wild beer. You guys are like just getting started, it feels like.
We are. Oh, yeah.
We're hitting our stride right now.
Henrik has a lot of work ahead of him.
I'm riding the wave, and I'm going to keep it going.
That's how I like it. And you're going to get married. Is that this year?
Oh, yeah, that's this year. Okay. July. So coming up.
You've been dating since junior high school. You're finally going to do it.
Good job. Finally going to do it. Special beer to come for that one, too.
More beer to come.
Well, congratulations to you and your family for that. I think it's the coolest thing. You guys have a great story, so thanks for coming in to tell it.
Thanks.
All right, folks. Like I said, the Spring Brews Festival is Saturday, March 30th. It's coming up. Tickets will be on sale this week, so by the time you listen to this show, they'll probably be up on Eventbrite. So go to thebrewingnetwork.com, and you'll be able to find them there. Hey, thanks to our sponsor, 21st Amendment. Check out their Fireside Chat Winter Ale. That's got spices and cocoa nibs in it. Still available in the stores now. And 2NA is just a great company making great beer. Sully's a good friend of mine, and I appreciate all their support. Go check out Beer Smith. Go to beersmith.com. Get your free 21-day trial of the Beersmith Brewing Software. Thanks to all of our sponsors and to Cuvée Brewing Company. We'll see you next time. Take care of yourselves and your beer.
The Session is a production of the Brewing Network and brought to you by More Beer. Check them out at morebeer.com. Find more content and live video of this show on our YouTube channel at youtube.com/brewingnetwork. For sponsorship opportunities and information, please reach out to advertising@thebrewingnetwork.com. To reach our hosts, contact feedback@thebrewingnetwork.com.